Hi there, if you're looking to get started with a website of your own and a domain name, we've got good news for you. With our affiliate link with Kualu, you can click on that link which is in your show notes, which is for our affiliate link. You can go over to Kualu to get started with your website and domain name today. They've also got a very handy chat support system which is usually in the bottom right hand corner to send messages back and forth to Kualu if you'd like to ask them for help to get started with your domain name and website today. So that's Kualu, and you can use them to get started with your website and domain name today. Thank you very much to Kualu for this affiliate link. Hi there, if you'd like to get rid of the ads in Entertainment Talks podcasts and listen to the ad-free versions of our episodes, we've got good news for you there as well. You can subscribe to Entertainment Talk at either the $5 level tier or $10 level tier. The $5 level tier will get you access to all of Entertainment Talk's previous ad-free podcasts and the future ad-free podcasts that we make in the month that you're subscribed for. If you also subscribe to us at the $10 level tier, that will get you that benefit that I've just mentioned, and it'll also grant you access to request a review for 2 episodes of a TV show and a general discussion on that show, or a film review of your choice. So if there's a TV show out there or a film that we've not covered perhaps and you'd like our opinion on it, we can watch 2 episodes of that TV show or film review. So it's one of either of those per month. Of course, if you continue subscribing each month, you can pick a TV show, then a film the next month, and so on and so forth. This is a great way to support Entertainment Talk, get your ad-free podcasts, and also get some reviews of your choice. Thank you very much for supporting us, and thank you for listening. Back to the show. Welcome to Becoming Heisenberg. It's Entertainment Talks podcast for Breaking Bad on AMC and Netflix. I'm your host Matthew. Joining me today, my co-host is David. How is it going?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Excellent. So we're here for season 3, episode 11, the one before the penultimate episode. We have 13, remember, for the season. It's called ABQ. What did you think of this one?
I enjoyed this episode. It's a little bit slower than some of the others, maybe in the run, but still got some decent stuff in it and some good reveals, I thought. Nice to see you have Jane popping back up in a flashback at the start of this, which is a nice tie into the end of the previous episode as well. So I thought that was quite good. Catching up with Hank and got all that stuff in there. We did get an interesting reveal about the death of I can't remember the character's name, but the guy that got shot dealing drugs. To call back to that. So yeah, combo, that was it. Yes. So yeah, there's some good stuff in here. It's just overall it's a little bit slower, I think, than some of the other episodes maybe, but still good nevertheless.
I think the pacing is fine for this. I think it's, you know, nice and sort of even and everything. It's another really great episode again. It continues to obviously build certain things. I'm not quite sure what to think of Jesse after this episode, but yeah. I think I'm supposed to be questioning that, so maybe that's kind of the intention. Because again, that's kind of the whole, I know we've talked about this a lot of times, the whole grey area Breaking Bad character thing anyway. Because even though he's got the idea of doing a bad thing, and this might be strange to say, he's a good, relatively good person. Mm-hmm. He's trying to do a bad thing, isn't quite clicked into the fact it's a very bad thing, although his friends are trying to tell him, and so is his new friend as well. Depends what they would call each other at this point. But we know he's not doing it deliberately for a bad reason and that kind of thing. So it's another one of those interesting ones. Because you could look at what Jesse's doing here and think, oh, this is terrible, and we write off the character. But I think that there's more to it than that. I didn't remember, obviously I remembered Combo dying. I didn't remember the whole this reveal part, so I was just as sort of surprised as Jesse was, which was quite interesting. So
yes,
that was pretty good. Got more scenes with Walt and Gus. That's always just intellectually brilliant. And some of those scenes are just very, very simple. Just two men just talking. That was really, really great. I remembered some of that scene. I remembered him sort of turning up at his door, but I don't remember what happened after that. But that was really, really brilliant. Again, Brian and Giancarlo, can't really go wrong, can you?
No.
I wonder, actually, if you were a writer and someone said, well, obviously you can get them to do deliberately bad things, but if someone said to a writer or a director or something, can you make Brian and Giancarlo look like bad actors in a scene? I don't know. I still don't know. Like, you could give them really stupid dialogue or something or whatever. Not even necessarily for Walt and Gus, but, like, make them be any characters or anything and try and make them look like bad actors. I just still don't know that you could do that. So, but they're one of them sort of pairs that you just love to see them on screen. Just, it's like, not even really an intellectual battle. It's like intellectual sort of stimulation because of, like, the way that they're talking and what they're talking about. And even when Walt later is trying to explain the science brain kind of thing, I haven't got a clue what he's talking about, but I'm still really interested. So you've got that going on. Sad to see the bit with Hank again. He really does get quite sort of beaten down in this series, doesn't he? Like, he's not really had many nice things happen to him. So you got that going on. Another great episode. Another very, very good episode. So there we go. All right, let's get into housekeeping, and then we'll do or content news or whatever, and then we will get into the recap. We'll see you for that in a minute. All right, recently on Entertainment Talk, yesterday I did another film review. Excuse me, this one was called No One Will Save You. Stars Caitlin Dever, who you might have seen in Unbelievable, which is still Netflix's best show, and also in some other things as well. I gave that a strong must-see rating. Really, really enjoyed that. One that not everybody might get, and if you don't get it, it's okay. It's one of them sort of interpretation kind of films. But still really, really good horror thriller sort of thing, so that was very good. That's on Disney Plus in the UK and Hulu, because it is a Hulu film, in the US, or wherever you can get either of those two things. So there's that one. Back to winning ways for Manchester United, and very good winning ways. A 3-0 win against Crystal Palace at home. This is on United Cast. In the Carabao Cup, beginning our defence of a trophy. I've never been able to say that on Entertainment Talk itself, apart from on that podcast. We won, of course, the Carabao Cup last year, and now we're trying to get it back or keep it. We don't want to lose the trophy. Apparently Man City decided to give up early, though, because they lost to Man City in their first round. They put out, like, a deliberately weak team. Pep was asked, like, hey, don't you want the quadruple? And he's like, oh, I have the treble. It's like, okay, all right. But we won't be facing Man City, neither will anybody else. In fact, last year's final, if we will remember, was Newcastle against Manchester United. That is what the next round is going to be. Not for the final. We haven't jumped that far yet. But interesting things going on nonetheless. And let's hope that come February, end of February, we can be in that final. At least for that trophy. So, over in the Premier League, we beat Burnley by 1-0. Very much more of a scrappy sort of win, that one. But a win is a win. 3 points is 3 points. We play Crystal Palace again in a few days' time on Saturday. And there's no excuse why we can't do the exact same thing. So, we'll see how... That's not... Football's not that simple. But we'll see what we can do in a few days' time. Over on Breaking Bad, of course, we've got last week's Fly episode review. So, if you're curious about our thoughts on that quote-unquote controversial episode, then you could check that one out. Over on the United Cast, we began our Champions League campaign, I suppose, with an unlucky 4-3 defeat against Bayern, away to Bayern in the Champions League. That is round one of six, so we're not out of the competition or anything. Still very early days, so there's that one. We also lost 3-1 to Brighton at home. I can't remember much of that game, but anyway, there was that one recently. Over on Gaming Talk, by the way, we will be doing a Gaming Talk tomorrow. I've got notes prepped and stuff already. But recently we talked about Baby Steps, Tomb Raider being remastered for current gen consoles, and a bit of Spider-Man 2.
The Diabolical 7 for Gen V, it's starting today / tomorrow, depending on where you live and whatnot. It's beginning, it's a spin-off show of The Boys within the same sort of world and universe and all that sort of thing. That is going to be on Amazon Prime. I've done a Season 1 preview podcast, you can catch that. It's very, very short, it's like 15 minutes. You can catch that before Season 1 begins with 3 episodes this week. Look out for a podcast at some point on Friday for the beginning portion of that, and that's pretty much what we've been doing on entertainmenttalk.org and on podcast platforms. Right. Oh, by the way, Classic Review Season 6 on the way. I've created it. Yes, I keep mentioning it, but apparently mentioning it is working because people are noticing the episodes more, which is the idea and is very helpful. There is 5 seasons and a bonus season to go and look for before I release Season 6 in December, so go and check that out as well. In a flashback, Jesse Pinkman and Jane, I don't know why I always read out the full names, Jesse and Jane, visit the Georgia O'Keeffe Museum and view her painting, My Last Door. They debate its meaning before Jane concludes that O'Keeffe was simply trying to make a good feeling last. There was some elements in this episode, particularly this bit at the beginning and a few other scenes, where characters are going through, characters are having nicer sort of scenes, like you've got the white family dinner later on, you've got obviously the conversation between Walt and Gus, but this is a good one to start the episode with. He says to her that, Jane has convinced him that this is supposed to or could look like a vagina of some kind, and he's very, very confused by this. Turns out she's messing about with him, and she just goes, it's a door, by the way. So I thought that was very good. A nice memory before we know what tragically happens here. Obviously, he's still very unaware of Walt's inclusion in this whole thing. And then they have a nice sort of moment in the car. And they talk about it in the car, like, doing things more than once. And I like when she says, like, oh, maybe you should only have sex once, and he's like, no, wait a minute. So, because they talk about, you know, viewing paintings and listening to songs and other things that people do more than once. So, it's nice memories to start the episode. So, it was good to have that at least. It was just a nice beginning of the episode. What did you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really great to see Jane back in this episode, and I'd completely forgotten about this exchange, and
I remembered, you know, some of it.
Yeah, and Kirsten Ritter, you know, was great in that role, and it's just nice to see her pop back up again. And I like the way that, I mean, this is sort of pre-credit, and it ties into the end of the previous episode where he picks up the cigarette that had got the lipstick mark on it that was in the ashtray in the car, and so it's quite a nice sort of,
right, yeah,
you know,
yeah,
ties back to that. And the Georgia O'Keeffe thing, I mean she wasn't actually lying to him. I mean, the artist Georgia O'Keeffe did do paintings that were related to female anatomy, and you know, it's just the one that he happened to be looking at was a series of doors. But yes. I mean, it's sort of interesting that because it's the type of thing that couples will do, you know, will go to art galleries and that sort of stuff. So I thought it was just quite sweet, and it's a really cute moment between the pair of them having that conversation. And the way Jane sort of turns it around about maybe we should only have sex once, and if that's, you know, and you can see Jesse immediately starting to backpedal. I mean, clearly she's far cleverer than he is. You know, it's just a really nice dynamic and a really interesting conversation and fun and very sweet. I do miss her as a character, but you know, had she not disappeared off this, maybe we wouldn't have got Jessica Jones. So, you know.
Yeah, yeah. She does credit this for Jessica Jones, doesn't she?
Yes, so. Yeah, she does. She credits it because she was known more as a sort of sitcom-y kind of actress. And then she got this, and then she got Jessica Jones. And now she's going to be in the new Orphan Black series. So, you know. Mm.
And maybe, just maybe one day return as Jessica Jones.
Well, yes, that would also be nice if she popped up there sometime as well.
Correct me if I'm wrong. So, because we got the Daredevil show on the way, which is the start of the revival of all that. We got Kingpin in there, Vincent D'Onofrio. Did they say if Punisher was in that? I can't honestly remember if they said
no.
that.
No, the only people to come back for that we know of at the moment are Daredevil himself and Kingpin. We've not even got confirmation of Foggy or Karen or, I mean, yeah, there's nobody else confirmed.
Right. So. I just couldn't remember if Punisher was John Bernthal. So we'll see. In the present, Hank is frustrated with his physical therapy. Marie gives Skylar White the therapy bill to pay as they previously discussed. Walter White attempts to pay with his drug money, but Skylar insists the source must be unimpeachable. Walt takes her to meet Saul Goodman, who laundered his money in the past. Skylar is put off by his flippant personality and his scheme to buy a laser tag facility. Instead, she suggests a more believable business investment, the car wash where Walt previously worked. Saul objects, but Skylar offers to help by managing the car wash. Walt worries that this would make her liable for his actions, but she reveals she never actually filed for divorce, so spousal privilege will apply. I neither remembered that or knew that in the first place about marriage, because I don't Google stuff about marriage, because I'm not married.
Yeah, so, why would you?
Yeah. If I hear things about married couples or whatever, then fair enough, but I don't like Google stuff about that, so there'd be no reason for me to know that, but anyway. I know technically I've already known that before because I've seen this scene before, but I didn't remember it. So anyway, it's an interesting little bit of information. Is that like just an American thing, or is that a general thing? Because obviously different countries
have. I believe it's a general thing. I could be very wrong about that, but certainly I knew it was a thing in America. I think it's a thing in the UK as well, but I'm not 100% sure on that. Okay. I mean, it sort of makes sense because, you know, you can't compel a family member to testify or a wife to testify against her own husband. Mm-hmm. You know, and so I sort of understand that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I like Sol's, explanation for why it doesn't work, you know. Because you need an inside man, basically. I remember Walt buying the car wash or going to buy the car wash. I sort of remembered that. I forgot Skylar was actually the person that was sort of that ended up running it. But yeah.
I remember that they did do those things when they drove there. I was like, oh yeah, this bit sort of happens. So that's quite cool. I wonder because you've got Dean Norris in it for Hank. What instructions, because obviously director goes up to an actor and says, hey, when you're doing this scene, you've got these lines, but can you make sure you do this other bit, or like a little bit of sort of guidance? We've seen that before. I heard that in many interviews. I wonder what direction Dean was given for this, because basically what he's doing here is, okay, you're going to grab these rails, you're going to shake quite a lot, because he's really struggling to, especially with his arms, he's really struggling to kind of keep his balance. Yeah, he did it very, very well, is sort of my point. I'm just curious as to what direction they maybe gave him. I like how, I can't remember if he's going by Walt Jr. or Flynn. I think it's Walt Jr. again, isn't it? How he's able to take, like, he doesn't get upset by Hank's response, because I guess he understands that that's not him. He's not actually angry at Walt Jr. It's just because the frustration has gotten the better of him and he's sort of flipped out at him. But
yeah,
it was nice to see the family there supporting Hank and stuff. That was cool as well. I don't have a ton to say about all the Hank stuff apart from, he said like, "Oh, how are you going to get me out of here?" and this sort of thing. And he says about, what is it? They get you on like a grease sled or something and like shoot him out the window. I think he said or something. Those are those scenes. I guess we can talk about that a bit more when we get to that in like later episodes when that actually comes up, because that was just a bit of a setup thing for that. So, but it was a good. There was all kind of good scenes. So, because the other point here is more sort of soul and everything. Him having a was it? Did he say a Dave or a Mike? A Mike, I think.
No, it wasn't a mic. It was I can't remember the name of the what he said, but yeah, he talks about you
You
basically
need a
need an
guy.
inside man.
Yeah.
You need a guy that's going to look the other way and be the person that that he's going to be the accomplice inside and prepared to look the other way and because obviously there is money going through that business that is false. So then that's how you launder money. So
But those are all quite good scenes. It's interesting to see not Skylar coming over to Walt's side, but her kind of, I think in this episode she kind of realized at some points that, okay, this money we're giving to Hank and all the other kind of stuff, she sort of temporarily needs to get on his side, at least temporarily, because obviously the thing that's going on with Hank here, and there's, if that doesn't go through properly and he's a DEA agent and all that kind of thing. So she's sort of going over to his side a bit more. What did you think of what she's doing here?
No, I mean, Skylar's taking a very practical point to this. She knows what Walt's doing. She's clearly not going to turn him in at this point. She intentionally didn't file the divorce papers because of the fact that it means that she can't be forced to testify against him. And yes, she is putting herself in danger because should this all come crashing down, she is essentially going to get locked up as well because she knew exactly what was happening and she's aiding and abetting a criminal and a criminal enterprise. So she is putting herself in danger for it and she can't just deny everything, particularly if she's running a business and cooking the books to launder the money through it, So it is a, but she's also very aware that Hank needs the money. And this is the only way they're going to be able to do it. So, and I understand that she is trying to be very careful about it and wants to know that it's unimpeachable and they can get away with it. And I mean, you go to Sol, and it's fair that Sol's not going to be. I mean, Sol isn't the most convincing of people when it comes to this sort of stuff. Sure, if you're some random drug dealer and that's all you know, then Sol's crazy plans of sort of investing in a laser tags like place would make perfect sense. But to Skylar and really to Walt, I think it's obvious it doesn't make sense. I mean, when you start, if you actually even start to dig into that, it's like, well, why is this guy got a laser tag business and all things? It just doesn't make any sense. So she's quite right.
I agree with her as well.
She's quite right. It needs to be something rather more believable. And Walt buying a car wash, which is a place which he worked at previously, makes perfect sense. But yeah, they do have the problem that it needs somebody on the inside to be able to cook the books for them and make sure that the money flows through it. So.
I like the sort of back and forth between Sol and Skylar as well. I think that's a
Yeah,
really,
I
really
mean,
good touch.
I'd forgotten that actually happened and I hadn't remembered that the two characters had actually met at that point. Because, I mean, there can't be that many scenes with Sol and Skylar in them. Across the run, I wouldn't have thought, because most of the time they're not really having to have contact with each other
No.
because she wasn't really. I'd forgotten she actually got that involved with it. I knew she knew, but I'd forgotten she was actually kind of involved and had met Sol and all that sort of stuff. So.
Yeah, all good stuff. Walt warns Jesse about skimming from the meth they produce. Jesse takes what he has stolen to Badger and Skinny Pete so they can sell it at Narcotics Anonymous, NA, which is the group that they're going to, the meetings. They balk at selling to recovery addicts, so Jesse shows how easy it is by striking up a conversation with Andrea Cantillo. She's a new member of the group. You see a brief sort of shot of her a little bit earlier. He soon becomes attached to Andrea while serendipitously attempting to sell her drugs. And then you get into all the Brock stuff later on. Yeah, again, this is where the kind of conflict comes up. And I'm glad that Badger and Skinny Pete sort of went to the better side, if you want to call it that. And they're sort of... I like the way that I think it's Skinny Pete, he's saying about like, okay, he's digging into all the positivity and stuff, and they just can't really sort of do it. I didn't remember them doing that either. I thought it might have been the case that Jesse turns to them after and says, can you just maybe sell it on the street then or something? Mm-hmm. Which he seemingly doesn't do, but then he gets, let's say, distracted by Andrea and sort of changes his mind a little bit in a later scene, which I thought was good as well. But it's the introduction of Andrea. She's going to be sticking around for a little bit. She's not just going to be a sort of just in this episode or something. So, and I think they made that nice and clear by sort of how involved Jesse gets with her and Brock and everybody else. So yeah, it's the beginning of something nice between these two. What do you think of her introduction and what Badger and Skinny Pete do here?
Yeah, it's there's something quite sweet about the sort of Badger and Skinny Pete stuff, because I mean I think it's Badger or it's one of them describes it as a bit like shooting a puppy in the face, trying to sell drugs to them, because you start to, and as we sort of find out when they have a conversation a little bit later as well, they're actually kind of in the program at this point. You know, they've got hooked under, they were supposed to be there just to kind of sit in and try and pretend to sell, you know, be interested in sell drugs, and they've actually got really quite hooked on the program of them trying to kind of kick it themselves. So there's something sort of rather sweet about how this has all turned out. And I think this also comes back, you know, you're talking about sort of how we're supposed to feel about Jesse. This is one of the things about this show. You know, once they've made the decision to keep Jesse around, Jesse takes the more traditional like role of going from being, you know, the bad guy drug dealer to being a good guy. The sort of he has the redemption arc throughout the series, which is the sort of traditional arc that you would usually have for a TV show of you know, somebody starts off in one place and is redeemed to be in a better place. Whereas the entire premise of Breaking Bad is actually the opposite. It's the sort of anti-hero arc of taking a very good guy and turning him to a very bad guy, which is the opposite of what you would usually do for a TV show, which is one of the things that makes it so brilliant. So Jesse's is sort of flipped, and we're at a point with this where Jesse's sort of trying to be the bad guy, but also had limits and has lines and sort of fails, is failing at that. And you know, but at this point in the story, he's still trying to be that, you know, he's still trying to be the sort of hard drug dealer-y sort of guy. And he's disappointed in the other two because they're not doing what he asked him. And then as we see later, he can't really follow through on that himself either. So it's really good. I'd forgotten about Andrea as well. It's really funny how much you forget about these in this show.
But that's her introduction. Andrea invites him home, where Jesse discovers she has a son, Brock. From Brock, Jesse learns that not because he told him, but because of what he discusses with Andrea, learns that Andrea has a younger brother, Tomas. Although she initially refuses to talk about him because they have like a cute dinner scene. Andrea later suggests they use meth, but Jesse declines now that she now that he knows she has a child, Andrea insists she wants to avoid having Brock go down the same path as Tomas, who shot a rival drug dealer as part of a drug gang initiation. Jesse recognizes that the story matches details of Combo's murder a few months prior, and he has a bit of a light bulb moment. It's an interesting one, this, the way that, because this is where he sort of does take that bit of a turn, because he goes from, and I like the sort of development here of him, where he's wanting to sell to this group, then gets attached to one of the members, gets interested in her and all that, then says, like, then is almost like trying to seduce her into buying the drugs, and she's like, oh no, if I get caught, and he's like, oh, don't get caught, and then the two other people burst in the room and all that on the sofa and stuff, and then later she brings it up again and is like, okay, I want to try it, and then he kind of backs off after he sort of settled into the situation and whatnot, and then realizes, like, oh no, you, like, why are you doing that, like, you're a mother and stuff, and it's wrong, and she flips out at him, and then he apologizes and that, so it kind of balances itself out a bit in that sort of way, because initially she's like, no, I don't want to do this at all, and then it sort of switches around a bit, and then they sort of, like, figure it out from there, and then it kind of concludes in an interesting way with this story, which sort of pushes it past that and pushes it forward. So it's quite a good bit of quite a good bit of sort of story and everything. I it was interesting the way it kind of all played out in that. Obviously I remembered Combo's dev, obviously we got to that ages ago, but I didn't remember that it got brought up again or anything like that. And interesting part for me with the later scene where he goes to that street corner, I don't think we've come across, and this isn't, I'm not going to consider this a spoiler, it's a very basic thing. I don't think we've come across the scene yet, but there's a scene where Jesse's on the street, and he's doing a deal or speaking to somebody on the street. He's about to get shot or something, and Walt comes along in a car, runs the person over, and then I remember the episode ending with him saying run, and I thought this was going to be it, but it wasn't. I think that's maybe a bit later or something. I don't know if it's in this season or I can't remember where it is, but I thought that was going to all link up to that and everything. So what do you think of these scenes anyway?
Yeah, this is the sort of what I rather like about how Jesse plays this, you know, because as I say, he's trying to be the sort of hard man of you know, well, it's easy, just sell drugs to these meth heads, and you know, the fact that they're all kind of recovering, and then he discovers she's got this kid, and I mean, this isn't the first time he's had this conversation with somebody in the show as well, because you remember Spooge, the in season two, they take Skinny Pete at knife point, and he ends up, and it's the same situation there where he has a go at the wife, because they're both high as anything, and they've got a little kid running around, and he saves the kid. So the moment he realizes there is a kid involved, and she then brings up the idea of actually taking the drugs, he's like, you know, what kind of mum are you? And she kind of goes off on him, sort of saying, I'm great. And it's like, well, yeah, not really. You were considering taking drugs, and you have been a drug addict, and you've got a small child to look after. So, you know, not brilliant parenting, to be honest. That's the thing. It shows that Jesse, whilst he is trying to be bad, is inherently a good person, I think. I think these scenes are really great. And it's such a nice tie back into the story of Combo's murder and the fact that it's the younger brother that was actually the kid that did it. Because, I mean, that was so shocking when it happened, because it was this child that just kind of rides up on a bike and shoots him. I'd sort of forgotten that comes back around and this whole sequence, how this sequence plays out. And I can't remember how it ends either, which is nice because I'll get to experience that again. So, yeah, it's just really great writing of just tying everything together. I love how they drop these little things and then just pull them back in, like, you know, the fact that the last week thing with the lipstick on the cigarette, and then it provides a sort of foot in the door for the opening of this one as well. And they even do it across seasons of and different shows, because there is there's a point where they're talking about the laser tag business in the car, and Sol mentions about being mistaken for Kevin Costner once, and managing, you know, he's talking about like how stories work if you're convinced that they're like work. And he's saying a woman was mistaken for Kevin Costner. They then actually show that on screen in the season finale of Better Call Saul, of the first season of Better Call Saul. So, you know, even things that have been dropped in this show get sort of pulled up and used somewhere else. So I love the writing and how it's constructed, and it's all woven together so well with this. And that's another great example of it, with the sort of tying this into Combo's murder, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm guessing then this is the end of the drug selling part, because I can't remember it going past this, and he sort of seems put off by the idea. Now, I can't remember if that's exactly the case, but Combo, the information about Combo did seem to change something in him, so that's...
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing. It's not like... I mean, Jesse's very much, at the moment, doing this entirely for his own ends. It's not like he actually needs to do it. He's doing it for his ego. You know, it's not because he needs the money, because he really, really, really doesn't at this point. You know, the money that he's getting, he's become a millionaire from cooking with Walt. So, I mean, yes, the other two maybe need the money more, but then also they're not going to do anything unless Jesse supplies it. And they're not particularly into it either at this point, because, you know, they've actually got into the program side of stuff. So yeah, there's really no need to be doing any of this. He's just doing it for his ego, to sort of, as a sort of FU to Walt, and, you know, the entire situation that he's in, and he's rebelling like a child. But it's sort of entirely unnecessary. So I can't remember how this ends either. So yeah.
So you got that going on. Gus invites Walt to his home for a private dinner. He tells Walt he regrets not having a mentor and warns him to never make the same mistake twice. There's also other conversations here as well. He talks about this soup dish and all that, and I guess nostalgic childhood memories and things, and Walt intricately explains how that works in the brain. This scene is so... Because I can't remember if you've got scenes like this in... Yeah, you do have scenes like this in Better Call Saul. But any sort of calm, carefully put together, just really delicate scene that Gus is in. I'm talking about him, him chopping up ingredients. Him kind of just like really careful. You know that sort of like careful thing we talked about with Gus before, where he's like precisely doing things and like slowly and carefully. But this time he's got Walt there. And even though Walt isn't exactly the same, He's got this curious attitude, because he's like, okay, why has he invited me? He's not like nervous or anything, but he's sort of, why has he invited me? What's sort of going on? And then they just start having this conversation between the two of them, and it's just, yeah, this whole scene is so simple, but it's the way that it's put together and the acting between the two of them. And I mean, Giancarlo's great on screen with most people, particularly when he's doing this type of thing. There's like different things that Gus does, obviously, throughout the whole series, but both of the series, but it's when he's doing these sorts of things, it's just so curious to watch, I suppose. And just seeing them exchange dialogue again was just brilliant. There's a couple of, we talked about this before with Michael Sheen, David Tennant, that there's certain pairs of characters and people that you could just watch them chat. Buzz and Woody to me is a is another one. I could just,
yeah,
you know, whether it's Toy Story 5, 6, what else is going to happen? Yeah, because I've said before in a few different, like, you know, Toy Story podcasts, I would just watch them. I would watch the two of them sit on a shelf, just talk for ages, because mm-hmm. I know I would love that sort of thing. Yeah, Buzz and Woody, good times. But do you know what I mean? There's certain pairs of people and actors and characters and whatnot that you would just watch them talk about anything, and it's just really, really great. And what they're talking about here isn't even particularly... It's not about what they're talking about either. It's not a sort of... It's not intricate to the show. This is more kind of just Gus managing his partnership and relationship, however you'd label that, if you would label it, with Walt. Because you just can't imagine that he does this with his other, let's say, clients. Like, he sees something in Walt. And even the times where he knows Walt has lied to him and things like that, he could have killed Walt a long time ago, probably. Heck, if he didn't call off the cousins, they probably would have killed him.
Yeah.
What, a few episodes ago or something. They would have definitely killed him when he came out of that shower. But obviously there was the message there. So there's something different there with Walt and Gus, and it's one of the most interesting things in the show. And yeah, it's just a simple kind of cutting up ingredients, having a bit of a chat. Talking about the meal that they're eating and having this delicate... There's also the part as well, he literally hands Walt a knife pointing towards himself. And goes, mm-hmm. like, do you want to... I think it's the garlic or something he says. Do you want to cut garlic? He could very, very easily kill Gus right there and then. But he trusts him. And it's just... It's really brilliant. So... There we go. Anyway, what do you think of the scene between these two?
Yeah, I don't know whether it's so much he trusts him as he's kind of... He trusts that Walt is not stupid enough to try and do something.
Also that, I think.
You know, I don't think he particularly trusts him.
But I suppose the thing is, why would Walt kill Gus, though?
Well, exactly. There's no...
He's got a super lab and all that, so...
Yeah, it's a really interesting little scene, and thematically it also links back to the opening as well, because the conversation that Jesse and Jane are having at the opening is about sort of the nature of doing the same thing over and over again, and you know, Jesse's sort of saying, why do you repeat things, and you know, she's making the point that it's, you know, it's different every time, or it makes a good feeling last, and that sort of thing. And there is a sort of mirroring of that within this conversation, with Gus sort of saying, you know, I want to give you some advice and mentor you, don't make the same mistake twice. So there is a sort of mirroring of that conversation between these two and the opening with Jane and Jesse as well, with the nature of sort of doing a repetitive, you know, doing something more than once and that sort of stuff, and their different takes on it. So I think that's another kind of interesting, clever bit of writing. And you know, the scene itself, as I say, it's always great to see them, those two on screen together, and it is just funny kind of watching the pair of them, who are both, like, you know, drug dealers all involved in the drug business, and they're having this perfectly normal meal together. And you could tell Walt's very uneasy about the whole thing, but and Gus on the front of it isn't at all. So it's a really interesting dynamic. And like you, I could quite happily sit and watch these two actors just sit and talk and do things together. So yeah.
Good stuff. The next day, Jesse travels to the corner where Combo was killed. He finds Tomas there and confirms that he's working for a drug gang. After an exchange, Jesse walks away enraged. Very simple and quick, but obviously we know what's, you know, the deal here. He gives these two men in this car that pull up quite a lot, I can't remember the exact amount of money, but quite a lot of money. They then just drive off, which gets him really annoyed. But then this kid hands Jesse something and he's like, you need to, what's his bounce? You need to get off of this corner sort of right now. See, when Jesse gives these two the money and he turns around, this kid reaches into his pocket. I thought, oh, he's going to pull out a gun. And then, well, I don't remember Walt running over a kid. That's the thing. That's when I was thinking, oh, is Walt going to turn up with a car and run either him or somebody else over? But then I don't remember the kid. Sorry, I don't remember the person that Walt ran over being a kid. So that doesn't quite track. Obviously, it doesn't happen here anyway. But I thought he was going to pull out a gun like he did on Combo and try and do something. But yeah, I also didn't remember these two coming around the corner. I was like, oh, do they kidnap Jesse here or something? Like, I couldn't quite... it's interesting how much we couldn't remember about this particular episode. I'm not sure. I'm not sure why that is. But anyway, I mean, there's still lots and lots of things from seasons 4 and 5, loads of stuff that still happens that I can still remember. So, there you go. Anyway, what do you think of the last scene here?
A couple of little things. I mean, Jesse going to sort of confirm that Tomas is there and is dealing drugs and, you know, is the person that killed Combo. It's interesting, the phrase that Tomas uses is telling Jesse to bounce at the end of it, because that's exactly what Combo said to Tomas when, you know, he says bounce, little man.
Yeah.
You know, so that's a sort of another clever bit of mirroring and writing in this. And the whole thing about the sort of the exchanging the money and then them turning up for drugs, if you watch The Wire, you'll know the reason for that is that it's to do with them, not the people that taking the money aren't the same people that hold the drugs, because that alters what you actually get charged with, because the money is held by one person and the drugs are held by somebody else. So it makes it easier to be able to say, no, we weren't dealing drugs or we weren't selling drugs, because the money and the drugs aren't on the same person. So that was sort of the, yeah, that's the reason why it's kind of done that way. It's a sort of separation of that. I have a vague recollection of the scene that you're referring to, and I can't remember where it sits either. I do wonder whether it is tied into the storyline, but maybe a bit further on, because I can't remember what Jesse does about this next. But it's an interesting little scene at the end, and I can't remember where it goes. So I'm looking forward to seeing that next week.
Yeah, I suppose the difference with Combo and Jesse here, Combo didn't even think the kid was involved with what Combo was clearly doing, because he's like, hey, you need to kind of get out of here. Turns out he was the one that was gonna cause the trouble, whereas Jesse's literally looking for him. So you got some interesting, but yeah, the whole bounce thing is an interesting little touch. So, but yeah, he walks away enraged. Yeah, I can't remember what he does about this at all, but I guess we'll all find out together as the episodes go on. So it's not a good or a bad or an important thing that we remember. I mean, that's the whole point of going through the show, is so that we, you know, go through it. So anyway, that's the end of the episode. So we go from there. Let's move on to some feedback, some emails. We've got two. If you'd like to write into the show, let us know what you think of the show so far. Is it your first time? Temp time, whatever, through the show. What do you think of either watching it for the first time or going back through it, etc., etc.? Matthew at entertainmenttalk.org, Twitter eTalkUK, and his information in your show notes. Caroline writes in again and says, I was wondering if there was a book end relationship theme between Andrea and Jane. Not one that I could. I mean, technically, we haven't quite bookended yet, because she is still in the show. Are you particularly asking that because Jane was in the episode in the same one that he meets Andrea for the first time? I guess there's a little something in that, possibly. Well,
I think there is a certain amount of that, of Jesse almost getting a second chance.
Yeah.
Like, and I think part of the reason of using Jane in this episode as well was to sort of remind people of his relationship with Jane, and then you've got this new relationship with Andrea and how he handles that slightly differently, because in both cases it was sort of him that was pushing her, pushing the other person towards drugs. And yeah, it's sort of, so I think there is a certain amount of that to it. I mean, it's not entirely that, because as you say, the thing with Andrea goes on a bit longer already. So, and you know, she's back. But I think certainly for this episode, there is a certain amount of that going on.
But we'll see if we pick up on anything else with that. Like I said, there are some bits of similarities and stuff, and they do meet in the same episode that we get a specific Jane flashback. So maybe there is something in that. Ben says, first time, long time, welcome. I was wondering how some of the deaths in BB compared to other big shows. Just for information, I've only seen it for the first time. There is one particular death, I'm not obviously not going to say who it is, that is one of the, like, not worst in the way it's executed, but worst in the way it made me feel, in an earned quality way, but worse in terms of, oh, that made me feel horrible. Later on in this show, and there's other deaths that have, like, disappointed me more, or just like, oh, they killed off that character, and that wasn't, because I don't really like when, I mean, I get it, you've got shows like, let's say, Game of Thrones, Walking Dead, that you're big ensemble, oh, it's a season finale, we have 30 characters, let's kill someone big, because that's what those shows sort of do. You get to the big climactic season finales, or episode 9 in Game of Thrones' case, and you do something like that. I don't always like when shows get to an episode, it's like, oh, we have to kill somebody, let's sort of almost pick somebody at random, and not give them any kind of, it's just we're going to shockingly kill this character off because we want to kill someone off, not because of a reason, and we haven't thought of, like, how this will affect things later. Foundation's been very clever about how it's dealt with that as well, and I thought, you know, they handled that pretty good. But yeah, there's one death, it's much later on in the series, that, not because of how gruesome it was, or like, oh my god, this character got killed in a really brutal way. It wasn't anything to do with that. I mean, if you want to look for that type of stuff, The Boys does that. They literally explode people every week. We'll see how Gen V handles that. But it was about the manner of how the character was killed, the reasons, how it affected other characters. It made me feel horrible, but it was supposed to. Obviously, I can't tell you all who it is. That would be a massive spoiler. And I can't think of any many deaths that made me feel that same way. It's like when a character death makes you feel actually uncomfortable, but not sort of like, oh no, so and so got shot or stabbed, that's really bad, they're a really big character. Anyway, there's still 15 other big names in this. So although when something like, I mean, arguably, in terms of, like, shows that have got big ensemble casts and killed off meaningful characters, Game of Thrones probably is number one at doing that. Because even though you do have lots and lots of characters, when someone died in that show, it felt like, oh my, they've killed off, like, a really big name, but there was a purpose and reason and stuff. So what do you think anyway?
I mean, you're missing the obvious one. Wait, the obvious show that did that, which was, of course, The Walking Dead, which was terrible at killing off characters for the sake of just that, drama.
That was more bad execution, though, rather than...
Yeah, but it was... You're talking about the sort of, you know, oh, we're coming up to a series finale or a mid-season finale, we need to kill somebody off. And what Breaking Bad, I think, is very good at is the deaths are earned. You know, the people that I don't think there's anybody really killed off in the show that isn't killed for a reason. You know,
oh, yeah,
there is a purpose. Unlike with Walking Dead, where the only reason they're killing somebody off is because, well, we need to kill somebody because it's a season finale, or it's a, you know, there's it feels a bit more arbitrary with something like that. Whereas with
Definitely.
Breaking Bad, there are definite plot reasons for a character dying, you know. Jane being one example, because of the fact that it forwards both Jesse and Walt's story in a particular way, you know, and takes the audience, it gets the audience to feel very differently about those two characters. So I think with, whereas with something like Walking Dead, you know, I'm just don't want to spoil anything for anybody, so I'm not going to name names, but there are certain particular deaths on that show, one that definitely stands out, where it very much feels like, oh well, we need to kill somebody off here, so we'll pick that person. And what I think makes Breaking Bad stand out against some of those other shows is the fact that it's done for a particular purpose, you know.
Obviously the difference as well with Breaking Bad, you've got a cast that's quarter of the size, and you can't kill Walt and then Jesse and then Gus, because then you'll have no one left and you'll have to finish the show. So it has to cherry pick deaths a bit more. But yeah, with Walking Dead, at times it was, as much as we love that show and it did have obviously issues and stuff, mostly caused by AMC, admittedly, it did feel like, oh, season finale, all right, 10 characters on a spinning wheel, let's spin the wheel. We'll leave, yeah, you know, Daryl and the big names and Rick off of it, but let's pick 10 of our other random survivors from the other three groups, stick them into a hat and pick a name out. This doesn't matter what's happening in the character's story, we're just going to pick a name from a hat or something.
Yeah, yeah. I would say that was the show that was worse for doing it than pretty much any other show of, you know, it almost soap level of like, well, we need something dramatic here, let's kill a character. For no other reason that we need a dramatic plot device, so we're just going to kill somebody off. There wasn't any real thought beyond that as to a lot of the characters that died in Walking Dead.
And sometimes it was just contractual reasons and things, like, well, we have to just get rid of you because of what's going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, and I mean, and there, you know, that does happen sometimes, and there's, you know, that's a slightly different issue, but I think you look at shows like Breaking Bad and you know, The Wire, there are purposes to the deaths in quite a lot of cases with those, you know, they are done for solid plotting reasons as opposed to sort of just dramatic effect, you know. And there's nothing worse than having a character kill off that sort of doesn't make any sense. And there was some of that in Game of Thrones as well. But quite often there was also reasons for certain characters dying. I think with character deaths, I think Breaking Bad handles it pretty well on the whole.
Mm-hmm. Just switching it to Scream for a second, obviously that's where people die as well. In Scream, well, the 2020, was it 2022? Not the most recent one, the one before that. Technically Scream 5, but whatever. They had a character death in that really annoyed me, that was... It was one that made the character look stupider than we all know that character is. And right, the character particularly switched off, like got distracted by something stupid for one moment and then got attacked, and it was like, oh, great. So I really don't like the direction that Scream has gone with that type of stuff, but that's Scream's problem to deal with. So, but yeah, Breaking Bad's probably got one that I can think of that made me feel like genuinely uncomfortable with the way it all sort of happened. Anyway, we've both seen lots and lots of different characters die on different things, so it's probably other ones that we can't quite remember. But there we go. There's that. That's the end of the episode. Thank you very much for listening. Of course, if you want to find the rest of our content in the meantime, entertainmenttalk.org, podcast platforms, Entertainment Talk, TV, games, films, main night podcast, take a look out for what we do. I've got two episodes left of Breaking Bad, but remember that Gen V starts this week with three episodes, so we're going to kind of sort of switch over to that. That's just going to be me on there, though. So I'm sure me and David will do something after this at some point soon, but we've still got two episodes to go with Breaking Bad, 12 and 13, so join us in the coming weeks for those. If you want to support what we do here, which would be very nice and very helpful, I can either simply, obviously, listen to more episodes, either on the podcast platforms or on the site. You can also tell other people, word of mouth, social media, do all those kinds of things. I can't ask you to like and subscribe because this isn't YouTube, so but do all those things. Patreon, $5, $10 level tiers, ad-free podcasts, or review options. Look for that as well if you'd like to. TV and film news. If you want to know about renewals, cancellations, pickups, air dates, strike news, there's been some big developments this week, film news, all those sorts of things. Geektown Radio on Tuesdays, geektown.co.uk. David, that is yours. What is going on over there?
Lots of things going on. We've had a number of show announcements for air dates and pickups and stuff. So like True Detective, we've got an air date in the UK for that. Speaking of Jessica Jones and Kirsten Ritter, her new show, Orphan Black Echoes, has been picked up by TVX. So that is going to be coming either later this year or early next year. We don't know an exact date for it yet. So we've got lots of air dates for stuff. The strike, as you mentioned, the writer's strike is pretty much over at this point. I mean, technically it's still got to be ratified by the members, but they are going to vote to end the strike. So they are all back to work. The writers have been allowed already to go back to work. So there is going to be a lot of stuff coming back in terms of things like the late night shows and Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, and basically the stuff that doesn't involve actors will all be coming back because the actors are still on strike. They will are meeting, I think, with the unions next week. So hopefully that gets resolved reasonably quickly now that the writer's strike is resolved and we should have everything back to actually running and things start filming. There are going to be shortened seasons of most of those big US TV shows, the network things like your NCIS and Chicago's. But if they can get this resolved quickly in the next couple of weeks for the actors, you might at least get half a season of those, which will come in the new year. So that is good news. At least the writers are back to work. So that's a good sign. We've got a few cancellations and other bits and pieces. You were on Geektown Radio this week as well, where we covered quite a lot of the strike stuff. We talked about Welcome to Wrexham. The two episodes this week were great as well. And we were talking about Starfield, of course. And you talked about Lies of P. You talked about the Barbie movie. You talked about Still Up, Invasion, lots of other stuff on there as well. So that's Geektown Radio episode 398. That is around wherever you get your podcasts, and you can get it from geektownradio.co.uk as well.
Excellent, so go and check out all that out. Geektown Radio on Tuesdays and geektown.co.uk. So look out for those things. Bex, you can find over on Twitch and other platforms as well. She's doing streaming and stuff. Trista, BYTES, go and support what she's doing. Us over on Twitch, EDTalk UK, and YouTube, Entertainment Talk Plays. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week for the penultimate episode of Season 3. That's episode 12. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time. Goodbye.
Bye.